A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of The Commons is sponsored by New College Franklin. At New College Franklin, students and professors together find their place in an educational tradition that stretches back for ages, returning to tried and true educational practices and texts that have been discarded for too long. Through a robust exploration of the great books and the classical seven liberal arts in an environment of rich conversation, shared life, and spiritual discipleship, New College students see how they fit in the unfolding story of redemption. Take the next step in your education and join the conversation in beautiful Franklin, Tennessee. Come for a preview weekend or schedule a visit at your convenience and continue building on the educational foundation you've started. You can learn more at www.newcollegefranklin.org. That's newcollegefranklin.org. And now, The Commons with Brian Phillips.
Well, hello and welcome back to The Commons. I'm your host, Brian Phillips. Thank you for tuning in. This is episode 4, and today I am joined by author Karen Marsh. I'm talking to her about her recently released book, Vintage Saints and Sinners, from IVP Books, but very specifically, one chapter from that book, in which she talks about the life and influence of Saint Augustine, perhaps one of the most well-known theologians and thinkers in the history of the church. But in addition to talking about St. Augustine, we also talk about the influence of his mom, Monica, or St. Monica. And so for all of you tuning in, whether you are doing so because we're talking about Augustine, or whether you happen to be a parent, particularly for a big section of our audience, homeschool mothers, I think that you're really going to enjoy this episode as we discuss the life, influence, and even struggles of both St. Augustine and his very godly praying mother, St. Monica. So hope you enjoy the show. Well, Karen Marsh, thank you so much for joining me today. It's good to have you on The Commons.
It is my pleasure to be with you, Brian.
Now, today we're discussing St. Augustine, who's one of the most well-known church fathers from the 4th and into the 5th century, one of the greatest theologians and philosophers, really one of the greatest minds in the history of Western civilization. And before we get to him, I want to ask you a bit about your recently released book, Vintage Saints and Sinners, from IVP Books. In that book, you discuss 25 Christians who had an impact on your own life. And I thoroughly enjoy reading biographies myself, biographies of the saints and particularly church history. And I really enjoyed how you combined both biography of these Christians and also autobiography in your book. So Karen, take a moment to tell us a bit about the book and what drove you to write it.
Well, it's a book. People ask me how long it took me to write the book. And in some ways, it's taken me about 13 years to write the book, in that every Friday for 13 years, I have hosted a group of college undergraduate students here at the University of Virginia. And I make a big homemade lunch And we gather in the living room of the Bonhoeffer house, where I live with my professor husband and my family and our dog. And we sit around the fireplace this time of year, and we talk about the lives and stories of witnesses from the Christian tradition. So every week we highlight a new saint, or sinner saint, as I like to say, and just look at their lives, read their words, think about their times, and ask questions. What did these people struggle with? What did they believe? And what do they have to say to us today? And I have found that for undergrads, and I think really for all of us, that stories are so powerful. You know, we live so much in our heads. We talk so much as Christians about doctrine and ideas and, you know, intellectual beliefs, that it is really powerful and refreshing to look at lives, to look at people and the choices they had to make and how they followed God in their own times. So it's been a growing love of mine. I love these people from the Christian tradition, because I find that, you know, there's something in all of them for each of us, and it allows us to use our imaginations and to kind of take a fresh look at our own lives and the questions that we ask of ourselves.
And so the book rose from sort of the lives that you were studying together with these students.
That's right. So every week it's a different person. Last week it's Advent. Now we read about the real Saint Nicholas, which is really fun, because not many of us knew much about the real Saint Nicholas. Yeah. So there's this educational angle. And I think too, I have found that for undergrads, many of them grew up in Sunday school, they grew up in the church, and they come to college and they're taking courses, and maybe some of the religious studies classes they take shake them up a bit, or personal experiences they have put them in some kind of conflict or question about their faith. And they really need a good safe place to talk about what they believe and how their faith is becoming their own. These saints allow us, I think, a lot of room to see there are many ways to follow Christ. There are many ways to be a person of faith. And it just opens up a lot of possibilities. And it has that intellectual angle that I think students often are drawn to.
Right. Right. That's wonderful. And just one of those 25 Christians you discuss in your book is St. Augustine. And you begin the chapter on Augustine with what I think is a very important point. And it relates to what you were just describing, these sessions, lunches with the students. Namely, that we often forget or miss that the saints gone before us were actual people, with flaws and sins and struggles, and some of them even had really checkered pasts. So why is that realization particularly important when it comes to St. Augustine?
Oh, well, Augustine is the perfect saint for a college student, because if you had met Augustine as a freshman in college, you never would have made him out to be a saint. And I just find his story so fascinating, because he was a total party animal. His mother was a Christian. He'd grown up in this small town in North Africa, and he went to the University of Carthage ready to party. And he rejected his Christian past, and just loved all the carnal pleasures of the university, and also loved the intellectual life at the University of Carthage. He studied rhetoric there and was very, very bright. And so at the University of Virginia, you know, we've got a lot of really smart kids here, as you know. We're right off of the Bonhoeffer House, is right off of Rugby Road, which is the hotbed of fraternities. And so to talk about Augustine, you know, he's like a guy they know, at least the college version of Augustine. And I just, again, I find it reassuring for kids who are maybe on the fence about their faith or not sure, to say, look at this guy. You know, he's one of the great saints of all time. And yet when he was your age, he was really struggling with what kind of life he was going to live and what kind of choices he was going to make. So, and I just find it kind of amusing too, in a way, to think about him. He was actually in a fraternity called the Wreckers. He's one of us for sure.
Oh, really? Okay. Now I have to admit, when I read that part of the chapter, I thought that that was sort of poetic license. Like you're just sort of setting the stage. I didn't realize he was actually a part of the fraternity called the Wreckers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably the Wreckers probably do not exist now on the campus of University of Virginia or anywhere else. But no, they were a real group. And I have a feeling they were even wilder than the guys here on Rugby Road, from what I hear.
Oh boy. Let's not go into that. Now you mentioned that St. Augustine had a devout Christian mom, and so behind Augustine's sinful days was a praying mother. His mother Monica was deeply worried about him, of course, understandably so, given what we've just talked about, his sort of rebellious days when he was young. So at one point, she even went to her bishop and asked him to talk to her son. And the bishop's response is a bit surprising. So how did the bishop respond, and what did he tell Monica to do?
Well, I love the bishop because I think he has a wisdom that many of us who are helicopter parents need to hear very well. Because, yes, she was frantic that her son was stepping away from her Christian faith and rejecting it. And so she went to him sobbing, really, and he said to her that force was pointless. You know, you can't drag, and we all know this, anybody with a teenager, you can't drag a kid to faith. And he said, let Augustine be where he is and only pray that the Lord will save him. He said, it cannot be that the son of these tears should perish. So I love the wisdom, the advice, you know, give him his space, but pray for him. And know that God honors your prayers and your faithfulness. You know, have patience and pray. And you know, it was as we know from the story, it was a number of years before Augustine finally really returned to Christ and to the faith. And in the meantime, she just had to stand back, as we all do as parents, and watch him make his mistakes and find his way, and let God do God's work in his life.
And that's such a beautiful line. It cannot be that the son of these tears should perish. There's a lot to hang on to there. That's wonderful. Now, this of course required a great deal of patience and perseverance on her part. And as she's continuing to kind of watch her son continue down this path, there's Monica in the background, so to speak, praying for him all along. One of the moves that Augustine went through after his education, he was brilliant, despite being, you know, a fraternity boy. His brilliance was recognized, and then he moves to Milan, right? And Augustine met the bishop there. The bishop that we've actually talked about in an earlier episode this season on the Commons, St. Ambrose, brilliant, talented St. Ambrose. And this surprising friendship developed between the two men. Now, talk about an odd couple, right?
Yeah.
So can you tell us a bit more about that friendship between Augustine and Ambrose and how it developed and the impact that it had on Augustine at this time?
Well, Augustine at the University of Carthage, as we've said, was a brilliant student, and he became a teacher of rhetoric. And this was, of course, the time of the Roman Empire, and he crossed the Mediterranean to what is now Italy and got a gig teaching in Milan, and he was a real up-and-coming academic. And it seems that in his mind, you know, philosophy and clear, cultivated thinking, a tranquil life inspired by Cicero, who was a great philosopher of the time, was his way, and that Christian theology and Christian spirituality was the backward way of his mother, of his past, of his childhood. And yet when he was in Milan, he heard a preacher, and that preacher was, of course, Ambrose, who was this dynamic bishop, and he was intelligent. He was really articulate. People really loved Ambrose. It says that, you know, the people of the town esteemed him. And so Ambrose, in a way, was that connection for Augustine between philosophical wisdom of Cicero and a deeper truth of Christ. And Ambrose, as an intelligent, articulate guy, who was also a loving pastor, I think gave Augustine a whole new idea, which was that, you know, the life of a Christian could be the life of a thinking person, but a person who also lives from the heart and lives out of the Spirit. So Ambrose was, I think, you know, God's gift to Augustine. He showed him a new way. He was a mentor, a role model in many ways of a Christian who Augustine might aspire to be.
Mm-hmm. And from my understanding, once Augustine was eventually converted, Ambrose actually baptized him.
That's right.
Which I thought was just another beautiful part of this story. And so Augustine is eventually converted, but not without some great inner turmoil, which I think is another important part of this story. Sometimes we kind of want to fast forward to when the conversion happens, but it was a painful time for Augustine. He was seemingly pulled by both his vices and this growing desire to be free from them. So, how did Augustine finally come to be converted as far as the circumstances themselves go?
Well, Augustine, of course, gives us his own words in his memoir, The Confessions. And we see, as you say, that he's going back and forth. He prays to God, grant me chastity and continence, but not yet. He didn't want to give up the pleasures that he so enjoyed. So he was tormented. And, you know, I see a lot of inner wrangling, a lot of work in his head. You know, he's sort of debating in his mind, you know, will he go for God? Will he hold back? He imagines his temptations as companions who have their grip on him. And he's just, it's miserable to read his writing, really, because he talks about just hanging by a thread. And he's just despairing that he'll never quite be able to give himself over to God. And so he, and I love this story. He's out in a garden, and it's one of the most famous stories in all of Christianity. So I'm sure I'm not, it's not a new story to many of your listeners, but
that just means it should be told again.
I agree. So right. There's Augustine, you know, he flings himself on the ground under a fig tree, and he's just sobbing. And he's so frustrated with himself and so unsure about how he will ever, you know, become this person of faith that he knows that he wants to be. And he hears through his cries this small, high voice singing through the garden. And he can't see if it's a boy or a girl or it's a child, but he hears a chanting. And the voice says, take it and read, take it and read, take it and read. And he wonders, you know, what this could be. And he goes and picks up the Bible, because he's sort of led to do that by this invitation to take it and read. And he reads the verse from Romans 13, the passage that says, not in reveling and drunkenness, not in lust and wantonness, not in quarrels and rivalries, but arm yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ. So, of course, perfect verse for Augustine. And he just was melted by this verse and gave himself to the Holy Spirit in that moment. And what I see in this story is, you know, an intellectual guy struggling with his doubts, overthinking, but it's just who he was. And God comes to him not through an airtight argument or apologetics, but through an invitation, a playful singing invitation in a garden to take up the Bible and read. It's almost like God came in through a window or a place in his heart that he hadn't even known was there. That's how it seems to me that the God's creativity and God's kindness, God's tenderness, God's playfulness were at work in finally bringing Augustine freedom and liberation from all these struggles that he had had for so many years. So I do love this story so much.
It's fitting too, as we're early in the Advent season, as you mentioned, leading to your study of St. Nicholas, right?
Yes.
That here you have this brilliant mind who is struggling not only with his own sins and vices, but struggling with his perhaps his intellectual objections and perhaps even a desire to maintain this intellectual superiority. And yet he hears, as you said, through the voice of a child, that's where the invitation came from. Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah. We remember Christ coming as a child, and that's how we have to receive him.
Yes.
Right. It's a very powerful picture, a wonderful story. And that's why, you know, yes, familiar story or not, it's so wonderful. Thank you for telling it again. So after his conversion, Augustine eventually went back to Africa and was even later appointed to be a bishop. And in that capacity, still his brilliance continued to shine through. He became a great defender of the faith, one of the greatest Christian theologians ever, as I mentioned in the introduction. And So tell us a little bit about the major works of St. Augustine and the major works he left behind and their continued influence, because his works are still widely read to this day.
Well, we have the benefit of Augustine's writings. He was one of the most prolific Latin authors in terms of surviving work. So, yes, you could write a lot of dissertations, and people have on Augustine. We have more than 100 different titles that Augustine left behind. You see apologetic works against the heresies of the Arians, the Manichaeans, you know, all kinds of heretics were a real problem back in his day, and they still are today. But he wrote against the heresies of these different people as the ideas of Christianity were being formed for all time. So I think we can credit Augustine with really being a powerful influence on what we have received, the legacy of Orthodox Christian belief. He wrote a lot of texts on Christian doctrine. He wrote commentaries on the Bible, on Genesis, Psalms, Paul's letters. We have many sermons and letters because, of course, as a bishop, he did a whole lot of preaching. But of course, the work that we know best was his Confessions, which is this personal account of his early life from the beginning through his conversion and on through his life. And it's such a formative work in American or in Western culture. And I know that for many university students, they read the Confessions in different classes because it's such an important model of this memoir and a telling of one's story. And I love the Confessions because, of course, we see the real Augustine, and we also see the way that he tells his story and also, through this story, thanks God for guarding his life, for seeing his path, and for keeping his heart all through these years. So, you know, he's looking back on his life through the eyes of faith, and what he sees is, of course, his struggles and his confusion, but also God's faithfulness. So, it's a personal work, but it's also a work of great literature. The City of God was another book that he's very well known for. And I'm told that he wrote The City of God to restore the confidence of his fellow Christians, because the sack of Rome by the Visigoths in 410, that was, you know, much on the minds of these people at the time. And Augustine was wanting to, as a pastor, encourage and give them hope for God's faithfulness and God's presence during that very chaotic time of the Roman Empire. He wrote a lot about the Trinity, on free will. Many of the doctrines that we know and discuss today, we can often trace back to concerns that Augustine had. And of course, you know, there's the quote about, you know, our heart is restless until we find our rest in thee. There are words and poems by Augustine that are part of our culture even now, and some of us don't know where these words come from. But yes, he certainly had a huge influence on Western culture and on other Christian thinkers who follow him. Brian, do you have a favorite work of Augustine's?
Oh, well, I think it would have to be the Confessions. Mm-hmm. No surprise there, I guess. I think that's probably for most. One thing that about the Confessions that I think is important, particularly for our audience, because most of our listeners, though not all, but most of our listeners are classical educators. So they're teachers, they're homeschooling moms, headmasters even. And so I want to draw out, just echoing back to Monica, how this whole time she's still behind the scenes. You know, there's her son, who is the brilliant professor, the teacher, the rebellious son, the friend of Ambrose, and then rises to be a prominent bishop, one of the greatest minds in Western civilization that the church has ever known. But behind all of that, there was a praying mother.
Yes.
I think I would be remiss if I didn't just kind of highlight that again, that even in the Confessions, Augustine mentions this, among the many things he thanks God for was his praying mother, that she was there, even when, you know, not the public face, there she was praying for her son. And that's a powerful image. And of course, you know, I'm sure every man listening to the podcast can say, you know, none of us were model sons. And many of us are where we are because of praying mothers. And so here is St. Augustine, who bears that same testimony that, you know, the prayers of the saints, you know, the faithful prayers offered on behalf of those who are going wayward or making very bad decisions, those don't go unheard.
Yeah.
And so to echo her bishop, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible. It cannot be that the son of these tears should perish. So I think that needs to be highlighted all over again. So for all of you moms out there, or teachers praying for students that you're very concerned about, or headmasters dealing with the same, it's certainly a wonderful truth to keep in mind.
Yeah. I'm the mother of three kids, and the youngest is a freshman in college now. And I take this very personally, because I think we are so bound by time and by circumstance, and we see our children making decisions or living in a way that, you know, we would not choose for them. And it is a very difficult thing to live in trust that God has reached us, and God will reach them, and that is God's work and God's privilege. Because of course we would, you know, I love to back channel, and the image of Monica going to the pastor to try to get him to intervene. I mean, I really understand that one.
Right.
And of course, you know, even after his advice, which is leave him be and pray for him, there were years that went by when there was really no, very little on the surface that would have encouraged Monica probably, or told her that he was making a turn and on the right path. So, trust and hope in God, real trust is a very difficult thing. And yet, you know, when you step back and think of it theologically or just logically, if God is, who we believe that God is, and God is loving and the Holy Spirit is alive, then, you know, why wouldn't God use creative ways to reach our children and speak into their lives in ways that surprise them and ways that surprise us? And our timing is may not play into it. And that's a painful thing, I know, for many of us.
It is. It is a very tough thing to remember that God's promises are true even when we can't see how they possibly could be at the moment, right?
Right.
That's a real struggle. Next question is something that we've been kind of hitting all around in this conversation, but I want to give you a chance to elaborate if there's anything else you'd like to add. As I mentioned earlier, your book, Vintage Saints and Sinners, it combines these biographical sketches of important Christians, but also autobiography because you address how each of those Christians have influenced your life. So how has Saint Augustine, whether it's his life or his writings, influenced you?
I do love the story of Augustine because he feels to me so familiar, you know, living with, surrounded by college students as I am here at the University of Virginia, you know, teaching them every Friday as they come through the door, filling their plates with food and then telling me their problems and their struggles. And he seems to me like a brother in a way. And I think another thing that a way that he's influenced me has really given me encouragement in being a thinker, in being a student, in being a person who loves the life of the mind, an intellectual. You know, Augustine was a brilliant thinker, not only as an undergrad studying rhetoric, but as you said, a bishop who wrote and preached. And I see in him, you know, a person who loved to learn, who loved to think about ideas, and, you know, saw these this interest as a gift of God, that his intellectual life was not something to fear, but it was something to embrace and be used for the glory of God. So I see him as a model of a pastor and a thinker and a very lively person, of course, who had all kinds of experiences. And because of his confessions, which I would encourage everyone to read, it's really surprisingly accessible for a text that's so old. It has that personal quality that I think you feel like you've really met the man, and you've really walked through his struggles with him. Mm-hmm. So I think when I think of Augustine, I think of the feelings I have are respect and real affection.
Now, for our listeners who would like to learn a little bit more about St. Augustine, I love these podcasts because there's such a great introduction to these saints gone before us and different movements in church history. But for those listeners who, after hearing this, say, all right, I want to learn more about this guy, what would you recommend? What resources would you direct them to?
Yes. Well, of course, Vintage Saints and Sinners, you'll get Augustine in 2,000 words. The chapters are pretty short. And I would say read the Confessions. You know, go right to the source. I find that primary texts are often so helpful and interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a new biography, which I have not read, but it's a biography of Monica that was recommended to me. It came out a couple of years ago. And, you know, there are some smaller works on Augustine. It is not hard to find books on Augustine, but I would say go to the Confessions, or even go online and look up sermons. You know, there's so much you could just pick up and read online, sermons, short mm-hmm. pieces of his that give you a taste for, you know, what some of his thinking was all about. But yeah, they're really great, great resources. But I always say go to the source, but check out that biography of Monica, because that's one that I'd like to read. And I would love to hear from one of your listeners, if they read it, you know, what they thought of it, because she's the one I'm interested in right now in my place in life as a mother.
Right. And we will try, given that, we'll try to make sure that we include a link to those books, particularly the biography on Monica,
right,
in the show notes on our website.
So. Great. I'll send that to you, Brian.
Oh, great. Sure. Great. Thank you. All right. Well, Karen Marsh, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed talking with you about St. Augustine, really enjoyed the book, Vintage Saints and Sinners. So thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Brian. All the best.
Well, once again, to Karen Marsh, thank you so much for joining me today. And for all of you listening, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Commons. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was as inspiring to you as it was to me. So tune in next week for episode 5, when I'll be joined by special guest David Hicks, discussing the life and work of Saint Benedict. We'll talk to you soon.